Now, HomePods Destroy.
Hello, and welcome to HomePods Destroy, a Star Trek discussion podcast, mainly focusing on the original series and the films. I'm here with my two compatriots, Graham Sibley.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
And I'm Derek Mantle, because I always forget Yay. About myself. And it's been a little while since we've done our last pod, and things have moved on in our lives, gentlemen, haven't they? Well, they have. You had a birthday last week?
Well, yeah, I suppose.
Birthdays happen.
He has them all the time, yeah.
Every year.
I'm getting to a point where I'd rather not have them every year, to be fair. But I could skip some, but yeah, that's all right. That's another. Mm-hmm. Let's not make it about me, eh, lads?
Well, you know. Okay, let's.
I mean, Graham had a birthday too.
Did he?
I reckon.
Probably so. Yeah.
I reckon it's before June since our last one.
Yeah. I can't remember my birthdays.
No.
I'm too old.
Nobody remembers your birthday.
No, that's true. And that's why we're going back to an original series Star Trek episode from the second season. We're going back to A Private Little War. This, for me, was very interesting. I have only seen this probably about three times, and I haven't seen this probably for well over a decade. And I forgot how atrocious it was.
It's not getting any better with age, is it? It's I don't think this one has got anything that redeems it, really. It is, quite frankly, an awful episode of Star Trek. In fact, it's not even an episode of Star Trek, I don't think. I think it's so far removed from everything else that it looks like Star Trek, but I don't think it is.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose you could say if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck, then it is a duck, but I don't believe that extends to this particular episode of Star Trek. This is an action drama story. That happened to be written for Star Trek, but it's not really a Star Trek.
Yeah, it looks like a duck, but walks like a Magato.
Love it.
Or Gamato.
Or Gamato. Yeah, it does. It does. It's redeeming qualities. In the opening sequence of the episode after the credits, the stretcher and the emergency care on Spock immediately afterwards was I thought quite dramatically done, well lit. I thought the background dialogue going on actually gave it a nice urgent sort of emergency room feel which I thought was authentic. That's it.
Yeah. that's the best bits in the
bit. The rest of it is dog shit.
Yeah. I mean, you bring up a really interesting point, because on the actual Enterprise itself, I mean, this is you know, two parts of the story. You have on the planet Neural, which is an idiotic name.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because, I mean, where the hell did they come up with that?
It hasn't got out of their brain.
Well, out of their brain, exactly.
It's named after the drugs that infect their neurons.
I suppose, yeah. I mean, that's it. Yeah, so basically, this is just, this is a drug planet. You know, that's all it is.
And to be fair, it is authentic Roddenberry, though.
It is very much authentic. I think, actually, for this to be like some kind of whole sort of just fever dream, drugs based like hallucination, that probably is a better way of explaining the events that actually
they just
go
had
down.
Baths full of drugs that they just soaked in.
Well, no, just rub them up and down their arm.
You literally take a couple of leaves, rub them up and down, and it's sexy time. I mean, I don't know why we're complaining. I mean, like, we should go to that place, but not together, us, I think.
I don't know. I mean, I would fit in with the hill people, you know. I'd have to move my shock of white hair.
Very convincing hair that the inhabitants had. The very, very convincing hair. Not wigs at all.
I mean, again, broad brush strokes here, you know. The good tribe with the white hair, the bad tribe with the black hair. What are they trying to tell us?
This episode was made, I think, a couple of episodes after Trouble with Tribbles. So I wonder if they just repurposed the Tribbles there for the.
You mean they just gutted them? They just gutted them and put them on.
The Tribbles open and turn them into wigs. Put them on these actors and perfect.
Oh, Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like it wasn't, the neural wasn't the only place where the drugs were flowing freely, I think. Yeah. Absolutely ridiculous.
But let's go back to the story. Okay, this is obviously, well, is it obviously? I can't even pronounce
it. It is obviously an allegory of the allegory Vietnam War.
Of the Vietnam War. There you go. So there you go. But very badly done. Well, really badly done.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's very difficult to do as a TV show. If you are going to react off current events, especially with something that is actually a story that's developing, you're always going to have a problem there, aren't you? Now, well, this was made in...
68?
Well, yeah, but the episode was actually made in late 67.
Right.
Air date is the 2nd of February, 68. And what happens in between when this is made and when it comes out, there's been a complete shift in public opinion about the Vietnam War. This actually, the launch date of this episode comes a day after the picture was taken, was meant to be the turning point of the Vietnam War as far as US public opinion was concerned. And that's the execution of Nguyen Van Lem. Which is a photo taken by...
Famous photo.
Taken by Eddie Adams. He won the Pulitzer for it. And the release date of this episode is one day after that picture was taken.
Right, bloody hell.
In the middle of the Tet Offensive, which
is notorious.
Notorious, yeah. And also changed public perception of the war. So it went from being a, yes, we've got to get behind our police action or whatever they termed it at the time, to get everyone out.
Yeah, what are we doing here? This is not this is not who we are.
Yeah.
We need to get out of this. Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently the episode got loads of letters of complaints about it at the time, but it didn't actually stop them from actually sending it out again in the August as well, the same year, completely as it was from the first time around as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's a brave attempt to tackle a contemporary issue. I think you can probably say that about it. But it's so ham-fisted that it's very difficult to take seriously.
Yeah.
It has a very downbeat ending. But even the ending is weird because it has a downbeat ending, but they still have to have the kind of like McCoy-Spock banter even at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
When actually, you know, this is all very, very, very grim. We're supposed to be feeling sadness and for this world that's now being put across or set down a path of complete destruction, you know, but no, let's have a bit of McCoy Spock banter quickly before we have this downbeat ending. So it really doesn't work at all. But as an attempt to try and address, a contemporary issue like the Vietnam War, I think it's brave enough. It's a really difficult thing to do anyway, particularly for network television. Mm. If they had been able to actually, even if they'd overcome the various technical and creative challenges that they set themselves, it still probably would have been something of a failure, even if it'd been an actually good episode.
Well, I mean, I would say that sort of like the whole thing actually loses logic anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it's without Spock on board on the planet, you know, it's just completely just is so all over the place. Some of the logic in there from Kirk, as someone who is representing America on the world stage, you know, American politics at the time, even that was all messed up. You know, it's all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, and the shadowy figure of a Klingon representing the communists, you know, sort of like back in the, you know, Viet Cong and, you know, and obviously, sort of Kirk going in helping out the you know southern Vietnamese, you know it doesn't, it's just terrible. It really is, even at that time, even before, I think, because the thing is that, you know, you've mentioned it before about Kirk, was it Shatner's acting prowess on this? He is. You know, he's all over the place, conflicted. He does, like, it's like Amdram in some bits as well, when he's trying to bring up some, you know, important subjects, subject matter. It's just like he just can't deal with it either. Maybe that's the script.
Well, it's just not by the dialogue, though, is it, Graham? You know, I mean, like, a war is a terrible way of life, but it is life. It's like, no, it's not. It's death. That's literally what it is. It's death. You know?
The script is awful. The direction's not very good either.
No, which is odd. Mark Daniels, who is a veteran, who directed many classic episodes of TOS.
It could be as well that this is, I think, only a couple of episodes after John Meredith Lucas takes over production from Gene Coon. So there is a
okay.
This is probably the first one he really had full hands on with. So there is maybe an excuse there, but really, when you look at the episodes around it, there really is no excuse for this one to be such a sort of Friday afternoon job,
isn't it? Given the magnitude of the themes that they're trying to tackle, this is not the one that, as you say, that to do on the Friday afternoon. I mean, it's a real ham-fisted attempt. But the plot's just, such as it is all over the place. It's good, really badly paced. I feel the climax of the episode, which is pretty ugly, to be honest with you, is just like, how do we bring this episode to a close? Because we don't really know how to make that happen. And, I mean, I thought that, you know, the Nona as a character, I'm sure we'll talk about her ere long, but, you know, I thought, you know, just take every aspect of classic misogynistic tropes about women and shove them all into this one character.
Yeah.
And it was ghastly, frankly, ghastly to watch.
Well, I think you're right. I think the problem is the ending is so weak is because the premise is so weak.
Mm.
Because we don't really know why the Klingons are getting involved here or doing it in such a odd way. We don't know why the Federation have got such an interest in this place. And this whole thing about visiting Edens is a recurring theme in the original series.
So why do we think the Klingons... I mean, this is not a fan fiction podcast, but why did the Klingons get involved in this planet?
I like the idea... let's go headcanon here. Well, I like the idea that they're going with this sort of flintlock idea, maybe to try to get around the Organians.
Mm.
If the Organians can neutralise their weapons, then let's go old school and let's slowly build it up. Let's use a planet to get up there. But that really falls apart. Doesn't make sense at all. Or else they want the Federation to get completely mired down in a pointless war.
Proxy wars.
A proxy war.
Yes.
Now, these sort of things today would make good storylines. The fact that the Klingons want to start a war there for no other reason than just to keep the Federation busy.
Yeah.
Which they would have to be, because...
But I feel, again, that's in hindsight that we come up
with... Yeah, it
needs to be included in the narrative of the episode, and it's not.
And at the time, America, you know, as, you know, the world cops and the nation, you know, the golden nation at that time, in a time of peace, as they, you know, except for, obviously, the evil empire across the way, saw themselves as being a force for good. And they didn't get their hands mucky.
Yeah.
No one actually, you know, was it, you know, all of that sort of entertainment at that time didn't have those shadowy conspiracy stuff until the, you know, until the, you know, Vietnam War and near the end of it, and then we have all of modern American culture starts going into things like the films, when you have like the parallax affair and things like this, and it gets more conspiratorial and stuff like this. America in the 60s was still, you know, very sure of itself. So I don't think that the proxy war would have come into that.
But the whole idea of it basically being that as soon as guns come along, they all start becoming warlike and...
Yes.
Yeah, like as if war was only invented with gunpowder.
Yes,
And that's got no premise as well, because they say this is a peaceful planet, and then all of a sudden they think, right, no, now they really just want to kill each other all the time.
It's also quite interesting that the peaceful people, the hill people and the village people, as they're always very peaceful, the village people, are portrayed as being like Native Americans, as usual. Bows and arrows, a peaceful, you know, sort of instruments of
the
death.
Noble savage, aren't they?
The noble savage, yes.
Yeah, living in their Garden of Eden until it gets stinked up by colonial forces. I suppose that's another allegory that you could possibly just about draw with it. But again, as usual, the the manner with which Star Trek and other shows from that era portrays, even if it's metaphors of or allegories of Native Americans, is clumsy and ham-fisted and usually involves boot polish of some description, and it's not very sophisticated. And that's what this is a horrifically unsophisticated episode, a horrifically unsophisticated story.
And that culminates most in the character of Nana.
Yeah.
Doesn't it? Because, yeah. I mean, this is Roddenberry writing a woman in the most Roddenberry way possible, I think.
Well, that's it. He's conjured up, or, you know, a slut witch
yes,
basically.
Yes, basically what yeah. it
is.
He has. Yeah.
She is dark-haired, yeah. She's seductive.
Swarthy.
Swarthy.
Yeah. I suppose the kindest thing you could,
she wears leather pants.
You could probably approximate it to is a Lady Macbeth type. But
That's being very kind.
That's very kind, yeah.
And very insulting to William Shakespeare.
Yeah.
That's okay, he can take
well,
it.
Well, the character itself is insulting to women anyway.
Yes.
Yeah, to be honest, because that's the only woman you actually see there, except for Uhura on the Enterprise, who actually is a bit of a big head because she knows what she's doing up there at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
But you only see
Chapel's there as well.
Oh, and Chapel, sorry, yeah. I did forget Chapel.
Well, yeah, but Chapel... When in the bitch slapping scene towards the end, you know, Scotty runs in, sees her, says, "What are you doing, woman?" And grabs her and holds on. It's like, "What are you doing?
Get your hands off her!
Get your hands off her, you creep!"
Well, I mean, he just woke up after sort of like, you know, pulling himself out of
what
a bottle.
Was he doing going down the sick bay?
Well, he's gone down to get some pills, isn't he? his hangover. Oh, no, touch a brain fever again, doctor. Will you help me out? Help me out, that poor Scotsman.
So he's walked in there and he's like, you know, he's still half drunk anyway. Yeah, yeah. And he thinks, what the hell's happening?
Oh, great,
here?
There's a fight.
Yeah.
If you look at it through that prism of Scotty as alcoholic,
yeah,
wandering down for some kind of respite for and walks in there and sees a fight going on, and oh god, it's awful. It was just like some ghastly kitchen sink drama from the 1970s or something like that. It's really, really poor.
Well, let's go back to Nona again, actually.
Yeah. Sorry,
and the characters. Because we have deviated, because we obviously, there are certain
any
things...
Any chance to talk about drunk Scotty?
Yeah, well, that's it, you know. I mean, Nona's character, you know, has been the only native woman that we see on the planet, because I didn't notice any other...
There is one woman in the sort of establishing shots of the tribe, but... that is it. Yeah, that's your lot for women.
You know, so and Nona has, you know, an effect on the whole story anyway, or she's put it into this story to make certain points about, you know, men who don't want to fight are, you know, impotent, and, you know, and she's taking the mickey out of her husband who is a cockood, you know, you know, and all that sort of stuff. There's lots of that sort of, she's a harridan and, you know, much stronger than the men around her as well. And again, that's a stereotype of you know, the Scarlet Woman, you know, and it is, the way it's portrayed is pretty bad, I think.
Yeah. I think the only way you could rescue that idea of what she is by saying that she's some kind of Klingon spy, been nested in there to just force a conflict rather than to have the one side stronger than the other, to try to make them fight. If she's not of that planet, she's got all the ideas about how they should fight and introducing toxic masculinity to the world, then that makes sense as well.
Yeah, if you look at it as a holistic part. So she's either a Klingon herself, or she's a native who has been turned by the Klingons.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be that all Kanuti women on that planet are actually Klingons, and that they've been. And this is a very long game that the Klingons have been playing, and then they embedded them, you know, and they grew up in there, and they are on the front line of the culture war aspect of whatever this shitty campaign is, pointless campaign is that they're doing here.
Yeah.
I think that you could also get away with saying that they're using the planet as a testing ground for different types of proxy warfare. So you could say that. But again, you need, this is all headcanon.
No, it's all
fan fiction.
I've got what the Klingons actually want it for. This is just like a theme park for them. They just want it there. This is their like the Magato there because that's for Klingon holidaymakers to go down there and have a good fight with the Magata. And all the village people and the hill people, they're all just park rangers.
Yeah. I thought you said when the village people, they actually are entertainment for the weekend disco.
Well, yeah, basically. Yeah, they're the redcoats. And because what you've got is you've got the Magato. They're as common as grey squirrels are around here. And they're an apex predator.
They certainly are.
Mind you, they're very slow and they're not very good at eating people.
No, they take their time.
Wholly unconvincing fight. The second one. Oh, well, the first one's bad enough, but the second
one. The first one was terrible. The second one was worse.
Well, I think that was just sexist because that's the female species, wasn't it? The second one.
Disintegrate.
Oh, yeah. The one with the lipstick and the guy.
But disintegrating the Mugato, I think, is a little bit overkill.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like in McCoy, just like totally disintegrating the Magatu.
No wonder they're endangered.
Are they good eating then, are they?
Well, not if you disintegrate them.
Yeah, he's just going to tuck down with a mint julep and a nice prime cut of Magatu.
You did say squirrels. You did mention, they are like squirrels.
These are ideas that we're just rocking up with. They don't even bother coming up with one reason why all this shit's going down.
And that shows you how bad this episode is if we have to make up all our work.
I mean, the Magatu is quite an iconic creature, isn't it? Because, you know, but mainly because it's so kind of stupid. But it's got a very, very fearsome growl, and it's not exactly the Gorn, is it, when it comes to Star Trek creatures?
No.
It's got a way to go. I mean, we'll just quickly check. There's a Lower Decks episode in which the Magatu feature, and it's brilliant, because all episodes of Lower Decks are brilliant. But they get a kinder portrayal. In that Lower Decks episode. But anyway, we're not here to talk about that.
I mean, I always thought that the Magatu or Gamatu, you know, as McCoy.
It was the original name for it, wasn't it? Is that what you said?
And is also in the credits as written that way.
Oh, is it really?
Yes.
Oh, so they changed it at the last minute.
They did, yeah. So
that's probably because somebody mispronounced it then.
DeForest Kelly.
His teeth couldn't, you know,
couldn't get his mush around it.
You know, well, that's what it's called now.
Yeah, but I always thought that sort of they strayed into Irwin Allen monster of the week thing here.
Oh yeah,
is that, you know, I mean, Star Trek has in general population is seen as being monster of the week, you know, sort of science fiction. But for us, because we watch loads of it, you don't really have many monsters, or you have loads of energy monsters because they're easy to do. Mm. You know, you don't have people dressed up in costumes that often.
It's hard to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, so that for me has always been a big failing for this episode because it's obviously a gorilla suit with a horn on it.
Mm. Yes,
you know, and
just
a tail.
Returning to Nona. I mean, her demise, obviously, because she is the catalyst for what actually then starts the actual war. She's the spark, because Tyree, who's a dope, right? I mean, he's just a dope, dopey guy. He is so, even though he's being cuckolded, he's so beguiled and bewitched that he's driven to rage and decides to go up. And that's supposed to be the emotional payoff at the end of the episode.
But that's because he's off his tits on her drugs.
Because he's off his tits on her drugs, yeah, basically. Yeah, and so he's now reacting and becoming violent because someone has killed his abuser.
And Pusher.
And Pusher at the same time. So it's pretty ghastly stuff. And also the fact that she meets her end while village people are trying to gang rape her is also pretty awful, pretty ugly, really badly done. I don't want to say unnecessary because I don't want to be pearl clutchy about stuff like this. I'm not suggesting that we don't tackle difficult themes, but I think that there is a method and a process behind the creation of those kind of tropes, those kind of themes, and those kind of scenes that just wasn't really observed in this episode, and I just thought it was pretty crass and very difficult.
Well,
to
I found it very offensive because you built up this woman, as you said, Graham, like the Lady Macbeth thing. You know, the idea that she has to have a horrible ending.
Mm.
You know, you knew that she, because she is the harlot.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
And the thing is, the idea, and you know, that's that sequence at the end with her is going to be a gang rape. That's what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, how more awful the writer to say basically, this is an awful character. I'm going to give, you know, just desserts to that character.
Yeah.
That also plays on the writer of this. You know, it's obviously, you know, they obviously don't really have much of a good opinion. Well, I suppose it's that they write very broadly and they just go to those tropes, although maybe they believe the audience understands that, you know, that's what the audience wants. But, you know, but really it is an awful sequence, I find it, you know. And she, you know it's going to happen. She's going to get killed, you know. And that's, the, as you said, the payoff and the turning of, you know, paradise into a hell.
Yeah, so I suppose there's the kind of, the serpent aspect of it, isn't it? So as she is the serpent who offers the apple up to a certain extent.
Well, that's
well,
it, the Eve.
Which is, which is all still just like ghastly tropes that you know. Well, I would like to say we've left behind in our storytelling, but we probably haven't. But we're certainly, I mean, it's been a while since you'd have seen anything as quite as unsophisticated as this. It's really unsatisfactory end to the episode. But it does exemplify what is generally speaking a ghastly episode of Star Trek, with the exception, I think, of the Vulcan wellness subplot. I did enjoy the Vulcan wellness subplot.
Well, you would.
That's because you like a bit of a slap.
Yeah, because I like to be slapped like a bitch. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Can I do it now?
No, stop. Stop. Enough. Thank you. Any more than that, and I'll get sexy. No, I thought the so basically, I think that what we're talking about here is that if Spock is on that planet, he would guide Kirk to a less dramatic, probably more of a compromise solution, but probably wouldn't involve gang raping women. So they thought, well, we can't have that here. So so they get him shot in the cold open. And then we have this quite entertaining, albeit rather daft, subplot of him recovering through his injuries, because they can't. We haven't got any medicine for him. It's up to him now. He has to do it himself, which is stupid. And then he enters this meditative trance. And we're all gripped. We're gripped in wellness. Wellness is everywhere at the moment. And of course, wellness can be fine, but it easily transitions into, you know, this is you are the reason why you're so unfit, you know, and if you do these things you will be fit and healthy, and if you meditate a lot you'll become, you know, well again, and all of that. And you know, there's germs of all of this, but of truth in this, but a lot of it is just a flim-flam, you know. And you know, so that's what I was thinking about. All I could think about is, I thought, oh, he's just making up some rubbish because he just doesn't want to take any drugs. Basically, he doesn't want any medication. Go away with you with your potions. I'll go into a meditative trance, and and then give me a good old bitch slap when I wake up from Christine. He loves it, dirty bastard.
It's quite interesting. Also, we're introduced for the first time, Dr. Mbenga.
We do indeed. He comes back again. I think he comes back in the third season, Dr. Mbenga. And of course, Strange New World viewers will be very familiar with the character of Dr. Mbenga, but we won't dwell too much on that. No. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed those scenes between Mbenga and Christine, because so those scenes are enhanced somewhat because of watching Strange New World. And that's a nice feeling. And that adds value to the episode and makes those a little bit more enjoyable to watch. Obviously, entirely unintentional at the time. They had no idea how this was going to go. I mean, if they realised that people would be talking about this episode sort of 60 years later, you would think they probably are. Why? This is just a trashy piece of fiction that we put on.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, only designed to be watched once or twice.
Yeah.
And if we're lucky, it will do well in syndication for a few years. But then that'll be it, and it'll be confined to the archives. And they had no idea that of the fandom that was about to grip Star Trek.
No, I mean, I think this episode, like so many from the second series, you can get a great 20-second teaser trailer from it, with the monkey suit and the woman with her boobs and
the woman with the boobs
and the orange bra top thing that she was wearing, barely wearing,
yes,
and Spock getting shot what a great 20-second reel that is.
Yeah.
But really, I mean, like you see that throughout the whole of the second series, where these visually impacting things, trying to encourage people to watch, I suppose.
And, totally.
But then delivered with such garbage in between.
Well, yeah. this was an advertising episode, because they're trying to get people to watch the advertising.
Well, they all are, aren't they? Every episode of Star Trek, every TV show you watch is designed.
Her costume comes straight from Batman, doesn't it?
Oh yes.
Yeah. It does.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, with that's where the comparisons end, because Batman, despite being what it is a generally speaking a mostly thoughtfully put together TV show. I'm sure it's got its flaws, but this was I mean, when you consider generally speaking how well made the original series of Star Trek is, it is really noticeable when a stinker comes along.
Yeah.
And this goes down to them. But weirdly, it's well received, I think, amongst fandom. I think because I think that they're impressed by the messages, the stories that it's trying to, and the messages it's trying to tell.
It's revisited, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, it's been sequelized, isn't it? Is that a word? Sequelized? It is.
Well, yeah, it is now.
I think pretty much everything has nowadays, true, isn't it? Really, yeah. Everything's. There was a Next Gen episode that was kind of a sequel. They didn't make any references specifically, but the storyline was all about returning to a planet where a bad admiral had introduced more weapons to balance
and it had a hokey wellness subplot as well.
And it had a very hokey wellness subplot as well. Yeah.
So it's quite close.
Yes.
Too short a season. Yeah.
Yeah.
And not a particularly memorable episode.
Well, it was meant to be a Star Trek 2.
Is it a Phase 2 episode?
Phase 2 episode, yeah. Well, like right. So many of that season of Legion. So, and it was meant to be Kirk rather than Admiral Jameson.
Oh, really? I didn't realise that. I must confess, I watched the episode a couple of times and never revisited, I must say.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Oh, right, okay. Well, that's interesting. And it also, there's been direct sequels in fiction as well, original fiction, side canon.
Yeah,
yes, original novels and comics as
and
well.
Comics.
It's been revisited, but I don't think anyone in this room was.
No, I don't. We're obviously not that interested in this episode.
No,
really, to actually sort of follow it on. You know, I mean, it just the nature of Star Trek fandom and you know, sort of creation as such from professionals later on is that they're all fans and they keep basically going over the bones of the old episodes and recycling everything. You know, I mean, funny
like we do,
like we do,
like
we do. We're doing it all the time because we haven't got.
I would argue that Lower Decks is the best Star Trek on going on right now, but it cannot exist without the other episodes, because it's constant fan service. It's just it's beautifully done and it's really good storytelling, great characters.
But I would think as well though, but for things like that to be successful, it does need turkeys like this.
Yeah.
For it to draw all of its sort of like the stuff out there that makes funny.
Lower Decks has great fun with well-known bad Star Trek tropes. Yeah. It has immense fun with it. And I'm looking forward in season 5 of Lower Decks to seeing Dr. Mbenga's Vulcan Wellness Centre.
Going back to Dr. Mbenga. That character, because obviously he appears again the original series, but he was seen as being a strong enough character that they looked at actually doing a spin-off series with him on a medical ship.
Really?
Yes, yes. And this is after Star Trek finished, and it is actually I'll let you look for it. But they thought that he would actually be a good character, not the main character,
no,
but having a medical ship called the USS Hope. You know, it was obviously maybe someone just wrote it on the back of a.
Like it could have been a fag pack, elevator pitch.
But it was a pitch anyway. Yeah. I mean, so it was good enough that they thought after Star Trek finished that they needed to get something coming up again.
It is interesting that there has, as of yet, not been a medical Star Trek TV show. a sort of like, you know, hospital in space kind of thing.
Or wellness episode.
The USS Wellness, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It goes to, I mean, it's, yeah, you're right, because it goes to the ethos of Star Trek itself as, you know, the idea about helping people and so on. I mean, you've had Next Generation have done things where Beverly Crusher is the captain of her own ship and so on.
Big Pharma Trek.
Yeah.
Big Pharma Trek.
Big Pharma Trek.
Trek finally.
Well, that's it. That's perfect. It should maybe that should be done. Sign me up. It's almost lots of drugs in there as well.
You need some novelty poo to go on to.
About the novelty poo.
No, we didn't forget about the novelty poo. Okay. We just hadn't got to it yet. I guess we are coming to a close. But I mean, that whole scene is just ghastly. The wobbly poo. And the guy with the drum. The drum and the writhing. It's like, go away.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose things, as soon as you start seeing the main character in buckskin, you think things aren't going well, are they?
All right, things like alternative remedies, okay, all right, fair enough, I suppose. And like certainly other planets that have got an abundance of pharmaceuticals and growing, that I can totally get on board with as a concept. Yeah. I can certainly get on board with the idea of Federation science not being baffled by seeing something on an alien planet and go, how on earth have they done that? But it's proper Star Trek goes, all right, well, like scanning it, I can see there's all these components in this leaf that could do these amazing things. But to ritualize it in the way that they, again, I can even get on board with the native population ritualizing treatment. I can get on board with that. But, you know, drums and sexual writhing is just, you know, it's low-hanging fruit, frankly, when it comes to that sort of thing.
Low-hanging poo.
It's the whole Papa Lazarus thing, like, you're my wife now. Yeah.
Jeez.
Nona and her bitches. I should just rename the episode. Maybe that's what I'll just call this episode. Nona and her bitches.
Oh, well. I think, chaps, maybe we have... I think we've exhausted this now. We probably could go on for ages.
Spent, yeah.
Yeah, you're pretty spent. Yeah. I mean, you know, after writhing around to that drum beat, with that poo on your shoulder.
I need someone to rub some herbs into my arm so that I can, you know, pep me up a bit.
You know, I think we will depart now.
Okay.
and say our farewell. So it's goodbye from me, Derek Mantle.
And it's goodbye from me, Graham Sibley.
And it's goodbye from me, Terry DeFellin.
Yeah, and we will hopefully be back very soon with another episode, which we haven't decided which one yet, but shall we try and go for a good one?
We'll definitely be doing a good episode of Star Trek.
Yeah, because we've done some dregs.
Thought this episode was actually better than it is. I have a feeling when we're discussing this, we thought we have fonder memories of this episode than the rest. So we didn't deliberately choose a bad episode.
No.
You know, we don't, as a rule, do that. The last time we did that was
Wolf in the Fold.
And it was such an unpleasant, bad, negative experience that we said, well, let's never do a shit episode of Star Trek ever again.
Is this episode worse than Wolf in the Fold?
No.
Yes.
Whoa.
Ooh. Ooh.
Whoa. I suppose I've got the casting vote here.
You have, come on.
I think it is worse than Wolf in the Fold. I think so. It's a fag paper. It's a real fag
paper.
They're
both pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, gun to my head saying, so, right, you've got to watch one of these episodes. Which one's it going to be?
I would say Wolf in the Fold.
Yeah.
Okay. I've been outvoted then. Yeah. So this is second baddest to Wolf in the Fold.
Yeah. I think the reason is that the Wolf in the Fold wears its misogyny on its sleeve. This one's a bit more underhand. But not really, because it's quite obvious.
Yes. But a bit more underhand. Language doesn't really serve. Well, you know, we're suffering from poverty of language
it's
here.
It's the protagonists, though, because obviously in Wolf in the Fold, you know, it's a male director.
Wolf in the Fold is a more interesting concept. The idea of a kind of Jack the Ripper is a slightly more interesting.
And there are some good performances in there.
Yes, there are.
From the guest stars as well.
Yeah.
So, but that doesn't save that episode. No. This has got nothing in it at all. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, we are going now. We're heading off to the football and a couple of pints afterwards. So, goodbye, dear listener, and hopefully we'll see you again soon.